Welcome to the Music Ed Matters podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Emily Williams-Birch, and this podcast, it exists for you. Whether you're a music lover, an educator, a choir member, each week we bring guests to the show to help explore what matters in music. I'm so glad that you're here. Welcome to the show. Hello. I'm sitting here thinking about choir performances and hearing people sing together. You know those times that you hear a performance and you just can't help but think, oh my gosh, how is that so beautiful? Or you're having what Dr. Madsen always called those aesthetic experiences. We all had them when we heard the Aeolians at National ACDA or when we heard them at NCCO. But I also had them when I heard Spivey Hall for the first time. I think I was 21 maybe, and I was sitting on their stage listening to a rehearsal. And I just couldn't get over how beautiful every single note was. How did they do that? And that's where research comes into this. Research, although sometimes it can be kind of a boring word, research, when done the right way, takes a question. Why is it so beautiful? How does teaching sequence impact the artistry? Research takes those questions and breaks them down in a very logical way to find out the why behind it. Today's episode with Dr. Craig Hurley does just that. He looked specifically at how infusing expression into the teaching process and the teaching sequence, which he was inspired to do after reading a Cornelia Yarborough article about the method of the master, Robert Shaw himself. Dr. Hurley looked at the sequence and the artistry because he teaches kindergarteners. And because he has a public school third, fourth, fifth grade choir, because he teaches the young artists, the fifth and sixth graders, and a couple others at Spivey Hall Children's Choir, he takes the sequential methods that we can all use, no matter what age of the quote unquote kids in front of you, and does the research to see why and how it works. I really feel like this one offers you tangible things to take away immediately. In fact, Dr. Hurley said himself, he goes to these conferences and watches research presentations and is having to constantly translate what people are using at the high school and college level to be tangible for his elementary level students and vice versa. And that transfer is so important. Y'all, we're doing the same thing. We're impacting lives with music, whether those lives are 5 years old or 95 years old or somewhere in the middle. Music changes lives, and we have the coolest job on the planet because we get to use music to do that. I'm really stoked to bring you this episode with Dr. Craig Hurley as he talks about his research into infusing expression and how it can impact your rehearsal tomorrow. Today on the show, we have the one and only Dr. Craig Hurley. What's up, doctor?
Woo-hoo! Hey, Dr. Birch, how you doing?
Is it still really fun to say doctor in front of your name?
I know. It still makes me, you know, get butterflies every time somebody says it. I'm
like, every time.
It happened.
This is the first semester that I've started with students who just don't know me at all, and they keep calling me Miss or Mrs. So I made an Instagram reel video using a bunch of costumes to dispel all the errors that they have in email. Like, nope, I'm not professor. Mm-mm, I'm not Mrs.
Right.
Don't you dare just write me a sentence. You better say, doctor, tell me what class you're in, what your question is, and don't forget a salutation and your name. Thank you.
Has it helped?
Yes. I think it's helping a little bit, whereas it was one in every 8 or 9 emails was appropriate. Now it's about 50-50.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
I feel like that's one of our jobs, though. I need to teach these young college kiddos appropriate email etiquette.
Yes.
That's not in the syllabus, but it should
be. Right. It's life skills. It's part of what we teach.
It is a life skill. So how's the elementary world right now?
Elementary world is great. At the moment, I'm virtual completely. So that is something new. I mean, this is my 21st year teaching, and you know, in the past 5 years, I write my lesson plans, but they go pretty quick. I pretty much know what I'm doing. I've done enough activities where I find the good ones. And I'm just amazed at how long it takes to plan a virtual lesson plan and creating all the materials and the visuals and the audio. And It's good. It's good. We get to sing, even though we're virtual. So that's good.
We do. I definitely want to talk about that more. For people who don't know Dr. Hurley, can you give us your elevator pitch? Who are you?
Sure. So my name is Craig Hurley, and I live in Georgia, and I've taught for 20 years in Georgia. I taught middle school for a year, and then kind of reluctantly went to elementary school. My wife was, or she was my fiance at the time, was in a different county, and we applied in each other's counties, and the elementary job was open in her county. So that's, I went to elementary and ended up loving it. I loved getting to teach singing, but also movement and instruments, and getting to have the kids for so many years was so great, and getting to teach whole families and getting to teach the entire school. Like when I taught middle school, when I do, you know, not everybody does choir. So in elementary, I love getting to teach all the students, which is really wonderful. So I've taught at two different elementary schools, 10 years in one, and I just finished my ninth year in my current school. I teach in Cobb County. And then I'm also starting my 15th season with Spivey Hall. It's crazy.
You're already in your 15th season.
Yes. So fun story, my senior year in undergrad, Martha Shaw came, she taught my elementary methods class. And in undergrad, you know, I kind of wanted to be a teacher. I kind of wanted to be a performer. Didn't really know, just loved music. And she walked in the first day of elementary methods and was like, I am going to teach you about the greatest profession in the world. And we're like, what's that? She's like, right? And she would just, because you know, in the undergrad, there's this stigma where, you know, those who can't teach, which is a lie. And she totally broke that and got us excited to be teachers and excited, you know, to change people's lives through music. And that kind of set me on my path. And 5 years later, she hired me at Spivey Hall to work with the young artists, which is, we're a fifth through eighth grade, but it's mostly fifth and sixth graders. It's our entry level choir for Spivey. And I'm starting my 15th year with it, so.
That's crazy. And we were just talking about that. It was the first time I officially met you. Martha had told me all about you. And then I really think I was 21 maybe. And it was the summer between one of my degrees, and I came up to visit and just watch a rehearsal. Right. And I just remember being blown away by the beauty that you got those young artists to create right there.
Yeah.
It was awesome. 15 cool. years. Congratulations.
I know. Thank you.
So Friday. Is Spivey starting back? How are you guys adapting with that right now?
We have started back. So we closed in March and we kept going with our virtual rehearsals, but we didn't really have an option for a concert and we didn't feel like we could pull together a virtual concert successfully. So we kind of changed our model and did some different things, and some were successful, some weren't. We met more this summer than we ever had. We had weekly staff meetings, and usually we take the summer off. Like we try to take a full like 4 weeks off in the summer, but we met every week and had lots of ideas. And the really hard part about it was, because, you know, in June, we were going back in person in August. Mm-hmm. And it got to be July and we didn't know. And then we have a whole reentry plan where we meet in small groups of 10 and we're 16 feet apart and wear a mask and all these protocol. And then about 2 weeks before we were hoping to start that, it finally came down and said, no, we're beginning virtual. Mm-hmm. We're starting virtually. And we're taking it month by month. We're on the campus of Clayton State University. And so they started classes August 10th and it's going well. So we're kind of seeing how they do and getting some feedback from things they've learned and things they can do better before we go back in person. We've already hired, we're planning for our Christmas concert to be virtual. Mm-hmm. Even if we get back in small groups, having an audience inside, it just doesn't seem like a realistic thing at this point in time.
Not right now.
So we're doing it virtually. And so we're on Monday nights. Usually I do 90 minutes, but I'm doing an hour. And then I have small groups come before rehearsal and after rehearsal, mainly because the thing that I miss the most about in-person rehearsals is that immediate feedback.
Yes.
I hear things and not hear things and correct them. And, you know, correcting somebody in notes, if they send me a video, you know, it might be a week before they read it and it's just complicated, especially when you're 10. you know, and this is your first choir experience. So we're meeting in small groups, and that way I can hear individuals sing and give them immediate feedback. And so we're doing that, and we're doing some things virtual, like we kind of moved our sight reading and theory curriculum. I recorded a bunch of videos. We're doing that virtually so that our hour together can be spent building community, repertoire, and those things that can only be done live. So that's kind of our model at the moment, but things are changing, as you know.
All the time. So what's been the biggest success? We were talking about this before the recording, celebrating the successes and moving on from the oopsies. What's been your biggest success?
So I've only had one spy rehearsal, so that's still new. For my elementary job, I've taught a rotation. So I've taught 6 classes. And the thing that I've enjoyed the most, 2 things. One is when, like, I'm teaching a 4th grade class and their 7th grade brother will get in the background and they just have to say hi to me. Or, like, the 7th grade brother already knows the song because they learned grade, and they're like, I know that song, and they came in and, like, joined them, which is awesome. So
that's so together cool.
It's really cool. The other thing that I've noticed just in teaching one rotation is movement exploration, especially with my older kids. They're at home and they feel safe and they don't feel like anybody's watching them and they're comfortable, and a lot of them are in their bedroom or at their kitchen table or whatever, and they just go for it, which is so fun to watch. Because usually, you know, my 3rd, 4th, and 5th graders, they'll move some, but they're always, you know, making sure they look cool.
Oh, yeah. It matters.
At home, they just go for it.
Wow. I love those. Celebrating those successes. It's been so fun to see their eyes light up. That's been when I start to get frustrated with a piece of technology not working. We unmuted on Monday night and sang all at the same time. And it was a hot mess.
Oh, yeah.
But it sounded so cool. And as they were singing, like, you saw their faces tentatively start to sing, because we were doing a very aleatoric version of something they were familiar with.
Right.
So we're calling it. And they start to hear harmonies happening. And then we got to the last chord, and they had to show their solfege of their chord and sing it as strongly and as confident with the best IPA ever. And, man, they would not stop singing that last chord. It was gorgeous.
That's awesome. So that's why we end every rehearsal with happy birthday. That's just been a tradition for years. And so we still do it, but we all unmute ourselves, and it's the world's ugliest birthday ever. But you have to use beautiful tone.
Yes.
Right. It's because of Zoom. So, but a lot of them, it was good because they don't understand why we're not singing on Zoom. They're like, why can't I unmute? So we sing in rehearsal. Just
that's fun.
Why this is not working.
You know what I thought was funny? We had a parent meeting at the end of our last rehearsal to answer any questions moving forward. And I love to have them unmute. I'm like, hey, unmute. Say hello. Hear yourself on Zoom. And it's like crickets. Nope. They have, I'm like, let's practice. Everyone say hello. Listen to what it sounds like. Oh, okay. So you got it. Now say hello to your friends. It's so interesting what you have to teach them and prepare them for.
Yeah, it's a new world.
It is. Okay, so let's reflect back to prior to COVID, when we were writing dissertations and working on this doctorate thing at very similar times. I was super jealous when you finished. You finished before me. I was so jealous.
I started
jealous.
Before you.
Yes, you did. Yes, I was on a hurry. I wanted to get done.
You sped through it. I sped through it. I went fast, and you went faster than I did.
I just wanted to be done. I wanted to get back to teaching.
I get it.
But you got yours. Tell me all about your dissertation. I would love to know your research because it sounds so interesting.
Sure. So because I teach both general music and, I mean, I have a choir at my elementary school that I work with every week, and I have the Spivey choir that I work with every week. I kind of straddle the world between, you know, general music teaching and choir teaching, and I infuse a lot of those practices together. And you know, with literacy concepts and teaching form and teaching expression is really where I went with my dissertation. So I knew I wanted it to be about singing. I knew I wanted to be about kids, and I knew I wanted to explore and learn more about how to teach expression. Okay, so like when you do your lit review, you just read everything. Like, kids singing, expression, singing, like any combination in the Google search, all everything under the sun. And there was this article about Robert Shaw choral techniques, but who doesn't know Robert Shaw, right? He's amazing. And basically it was videos of him teaching masterworks, and the lady that wrote it had broken down his sequence steps and how he had broken down those masterworks and how he had rehearsed it. And basically what he was doing was he would teach, you know, they would sing it on numbers rhythmically, and they would like all on one pitch. So just make sure the rhythm is precise, and then they would add expression to that rhythm, right? And then they would still no text, and then they would might sing it on solfege or sing it on rhythm accounting, but do the actual pitches and get like those two elements of the song together. And then they would do it on, then they would add the expression back, and then he would add the text. So he really kind of layered these things. And he said that the four elements of a song were pitch, rhythm, text, and expression. And my experience, kind of the way I was taught and the way I taught for many, many years, was we learned the rhythm, and once that was settled, we added the pitch, and then we'd move on to the text. And then 2 weeks before the concert, we don't want to peak early, which I don't think is a thing at all. We would add the expression, right? We'd add our faces, and we'd add the crescendo, and we'd add the dynamics. And my success rate with that was about 50-50, you know? Sometimes they remembered, and sometimes they got nervous and went back to how we learned it earlier. And I experienced it in honor choirs too. Like, you know, they would come to me knowing, or quote unquote knowing, the rhythm, the pitch, and the words. And most of our day, you know, building tone and creating expression and adding those pieces. And sometimes my honor choir concerts would be like, whoa, they got it all. It was amazing. And I remember this one, it was an elementary one, and our final run through, like at 2:30, I was like blown away. I was like, that was amazing. It was beautiful. They all went home on the buses for 3 hours, no rehearsal before their 6 o'clock concert. And it was all gone.
Those are the ones like, where you like get in the car afterwards and you're like, did I do anything correct? Yes. Those are the hardest honor choirs.
I wish we had recorded our dress rehearsal because it was beautiful. Yeah. There's got to be a better way. Right. Mm-hmm. So Robert Shaw had me thinking, and then my main professor at UGA, Rebecca Atkins, she was rehearsing something, and I was adding what she was going to do first, and she was like, oh, we do it perfectly the first time. I was like, what? Right? And she said, like, one of her theories was that she does a less of the music, so she would only do a phrase instead of like 32 measures. But those four bars or those eight bars are concert ready. So instead of layering things this way, they can't see my hands, can they?
That's okay. stacking up. So instead of
layering like rhythm on pitch, on text, on expression, right? You would do the first four measures, that chunk, and get all those elements, and then add the next chunk, and then add the next chunk. And so I did it with my choir. Spivey, I think 3 years ago, 4 years ago, sang at GMEA, our Georgia MEA.
Yes.
In Athens. And it was a thing where I figured out I had like 15 rehearsals between the beginning of the year and our GMEA performance, right? So I broke it down and figured out how to, you know, what we needed to do for each piece, total rehearsal plan. And I taught expression from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Day one, we sing the song expressively. This is just how it is, right? I'm very proud of that concert. It changed the way I taught. It changed the way my choir sounded. And there was just a new level of artistry that my kids achieved. So in research, it's one thing, you know, that might work because of there's all these variables that, right, you know, I did it, or maybe it was something I did, or maybe it was these certain kids or whatever. So you got to try to take all that out and see if changing the sequence actually makes them more expressive. So I did it for my dissertation, and to be honest, it was okay. It wasn't great. I had a small sample size. I used my own kids. They only did one song. So like half the kids did what I called an infused expression sequence, where they learn expression right from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And kids did a post expression sequence where they learn the rhythm, pitch, and words first, and then we add expression. But the problem with that was it could just be, better, more talented kids were in this,
mm-hmm,
the other one. So I graduated, passed off, and stopped paying the university. And so now the pressure's off. So I'm kind of redoing my dissertation, and my professor and I are doing it together. And I've recollected all the data. I made two sequences. There's 125 people in our sample.
Wow.
better. Yeah, that's great. And all 125 kids did the infused sequence and the post-expression sequence. So that makes it a much stronger study. And so what we're finding, and it's a 5-minute sequence. Like in my dissertation, they had to sight read and they had to count the rhythms and all this stuff. And we found that, you know, those kids who were better at sight reading did better in the end performance. We wanted to take all those variables out. Right.
Right.
So much research in the social sciences is like common sense, but you still have to do all this stuff.
Right. You have to do all this stuff. And yes. It's just, if you are listening right now and you are like, this is way too much academia research for me, just hang tight because this is so applicable. Don't you dare stop listening right now. Yes. This is the good stuff. And we're totally nerding out right now.
Right. And my research is actually, for the most part, pretty practical. There's some that I read and I'm like, I don't know, but I just don't know, right?
Same. I do read the journal. Yes. Like, I read it and I try so hard to be like, what do my students need to know from this? Yes. How can I be a better teacher? And it doesn't matter. You talk about yours.
Yeah, but I like to focus on what's going to affect me tomorrow in rehearsal, right? So anyway, we found that students who heard a expressive model from the beginning, were expected to sing expressively from the beginning, where their attention was drawn and they were given feedback about that expression from the beginning, performed more expressively, right? Than those students who, you know, their first focus was rhythm and then pitch and then text, and then we added the expression. There were just weren't enough repetitions to make it solid for them to, perform that way. And I think that's what, in a much larger scale happens to a lot of us in our rehearsal sequences, is we save that expression for the very end and there's just not enough time.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, every time they run the song, they practice the rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
Every time they run the song, they practice the pitches. And most every time they practice the text, and that gives you opportunity to fix vowels and to change things and where it becomes such a habit that they sing correctly. But if we save expression to the end, it gets many less repetitions than your rhythm or your pitch or your text. And there's so many less opportunities as the teacher to say, yeah, that wasn't forte enough, or that was too much, or, we need any, all of those feedback things that we do. So by starting expression from the very beginning and constantly giving feedback, there's just more opportunities for them to learn. Now, having said that, students can get overwhelmed.
Yes.
And I teach, 9 and 10 and 11-year-olds all the time. And if you're asking them to, sit correctly and breathe and do this rhythm and do this pitch and sing in a foreign language and, and crescendo and decrescendo and do this word accent, it can be too much. So you have to read your singers, of course. But I think the idea is just to, A, treat expression equal to text and pitch, treat it as an equal part importance in the song, and B, introduce it as soon as possible in the learning sequence to make it, because you go to rehearsal and at least I leave and I sing it probably 4 more times in my head next rehearsal, and I think my kids do too. And so if they already have that expressive model and those expressive ideas in their head, they're going to be practicing it.
Right.
With it.
If we go back to what you said with the Shaw model, though, and we've all seen it as he's rehearsed, he was breaking it down to make it manageable into count singing with expression.
Right.
I think that might be. So could you tell us what would this look like? Do you have maybe the song you used in the research? How would this actually look?
I'm trying to think of the song. I've only heard it 125 times. Now all the woods are waking, the sun is rising high. Get up now before the dew is dry. This is the one we did a million times, right? So so we did it all rote to take out, those variables. So the first time you would just echo speak after me, but instead of me going, now all the woods are waking, the sun is rising high, I would go, now all the woods are waking, the sun is rising high, right? So I added that staccato and added that legato. So it's just rhythm and expression to start with. We already included text because we're not counting on numbers. This is just for the study. In your rehearsal, if your kids are trained, however they do it. Syllables, talking to me, solfege, whatever. And so they would get that rhythm and expression right off the bat. And then you would add the pitch and keep that expression.
Yes.
Idea how we broke it down in the study.
I feel like this is perfect for right now as we think about hybrid and virtual learning situations. You just said it yourself at the beginning. You used to teach 90 minutes and now you have that 1 hour. I'm finding that as the singers have been in their virtual classes all day, they're so tired. Here we are asking them to tune in on a Monday night. I think this right here, it's a horizontal approach instead of a vertical approach. This horizontal approach allows you to really focus and have success maybe on the A section or the first phrase of the A section, whatever your students need. So maybe is the breakdown then, instead of it being on the skills of rhythm, solfege, count singing, instead of those skills, is it more the breakdown of length of what they can take in? What would you, if you were a teacher listening right now and they wanted to apply this immediately to their rehearsal, what would they need to look at? What would be your suggestions of steps to implement this research?
Well, I tell my student teachers that, my students are my litmus tests. And so while I'm teaching, I'm always scanning for eyeballs, scanning for, those bright eyes. And so it really depends on what your kids are used to and how they used to rehearse. I found that because I've taught this way so much in the past 2 years, like by January, my kids, like I would do it and they'd be like, aren't you going to have us clap on the strong beats? Like they just know that this is part of what we do. And so they're used to singing expressively all the time and singing with articulation and dynamics, that becomes normal. But to break it down, I would think, so like, let's say if you were teaching Mary Had a Little Lamb, for lack of a better example, right?
Excellent example. Everyone will know that song.
Yes,
we're good.
Exactly. And normally you would teach it, you would read the rhythms on, syllables, and then you would play a little game and figure out the solfege, and then you would add the text. And then you might, if you get to it at the very end, add, you want all the little lambs to be staccato, whatever. Mary had a little lamb. You want all the littles to be staccato. Well, instead of doing that at the very end, you would just take that little element and do it right from the beginning. So when they read the rhythms, you're like, oh, I found a dot over these two notes. What do you think that means? And so you draw their attention to those dots and we talk about it. And, I always add a kinesthetic. If you can't see me, that's a staccato. So we add that kinesthetic response and add that in right from the beginning. So those expressive little things are always there. So I read this book while I was working on my dissertation, and it was all about Dalcroze for singers. And one of the things that Dalcroze did when he went to his university in Geneva, he was so impressed with how well his piano players, their technical abilities, right? They were master sight readers, could play anything. And he was very unimpressed with their musicality. And so he broke down, and he called them rules, which I kind of hesitate because, it's like music theory where you learn the rules and then you learn to break them. It's the same idea. So what he did was break down, and it was like something crazy, like 97 rules of expression.
Ooh, yeah. That's a lot to remember.
That's a lot of rules. Exactly. A lot of cases. But you can kind of make them very general, but those rules, and he would teach his pianists those rules and they would apply them to different songs. And if you've ever been in a conference with Judy Bauer, she has kind of the same thing. She calls them rules for transfer. And basically the idea is these things apply to lots of songs. So instead of us teaching them over and over and over on 20 different songs, I'm gonna teach them to you once, and then you're gonna be a smart kid and apply them to all those 20 different songs. I have my own rules for transfer inspired by Judy Bauer.
Yes.
A little bit different just because I feel like I teach younger kids, and so it's a little bit what I did is if it's something that I say over and over and over again, that became a rule for transfer, right? Mm-hmm. If I hear my catchphrases, like you must breathe before you sing, that's our first one, that kind of stuff that my kids need to know. So Dalcroze codified all these expression rules, and it was so interesting to read them, and they're very technical and you have to really think about it. But like some are basic, and the one I use all the time is the first beat of the measure gets the strongest beat.
Mm-hmm.
Those simple things like that. So when I'm rehearsing, we always clap on that first beat, but just thinking about these rules that transfer to lots of different songs helped me communicate those to my singers.
Yes, you're infusing the artistry that you want them to innately learn. So ultimately, at the end, you won't have to teach the artistry. They'll be artists.
It's been embedded the entire time.
Yeah, that goes infusing expression, embedding expression.
Right.
It's exactly.
Right.
And what a great time to try these things. As we're experimenting with everything else anyway, you might as well run your own little study and see how musical your different choirs can be.
One of the challenges, you have to know where you're headed.
Mm-hmm. You have to do that score study.
Exactly. Exactly. And you have to make those choices early.
Mm-hmm.
Change them.
You can.
You know. Yeah, totally. But, you know, I won't say a lot of people, because I've been guilty of it too, but when you learn along with your kids, you're just not as successful at all.
That is rule number one of successful teaching in intro to music ed. Number one. Do not punt.
Yes.
Show up prepared. Yeah. Have a whole playbook.
Absolutely.
Have a whole playbook. Oh my gosh, this is exciting. Yeah. I'm kind of stoked to go look at what we're going to do in rehearsal on Monday and see how I can flip it horizontal. I'm also going to go read that article about Shaw. I've watched some of those videos.
Yes.
But I need
it's by Camille Yarbrough.
She taught me in undergrad.
Yeah, she's pretty great.
Okay. I know exactly where to find that article.
Yay.
Hey, this was fun. You made research really tangible.
Good.
Thank you for sharing your stuff.
Yeah. No problem. I love it.
Are you going to publish?
We are working on that now. So we just wrote the results section.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll write a section and give it. We're collaborating. So we both ran the results because we're both nervous about statistics. So we made sure we got the same numbers, and we did, which was very exciting.
Yay.
Yeah, we got the same one. So that was good. And then, so we've written everything that we just have to write our discussion, and then we're going to hopefully submit it. So
we'll keep us posted.
And the publishing world, hopefully in the next year or two, it'll be published.
But at least we get a little glimpse into how we can use it right now. What did you say? What's going to impact my rehearsal tomorrow?
Exactly.
I love how you're using this and you're giving us examples for your little bitty babies, your spivey, a bit bigger babies, and then you're doing it with someone who uses it at the college level. I think that's so important right now.
Right. Well, I've been to so many middle and high school and college talks where I have to translate it into elementary language.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy to talk in elementary land and translate to their situations.
Yes, it's a bunch of translating. We're all out here doing the same thing, sharing music, as you said with Martha Shaw, changing people's lives with music.
That's right.
Oh, this was so much fun. I always give the guest a chance to say one thing that really matters, one thing you want the listener to walk away from this episode with. It can be related, it can be off topic, it can be organic, but if you were listening, what's one thing that you want them to really hear right now?
Well, there's a post-it in front of me that says, I teach children, not music.
Mm.
So that's my post. That's what I look at while I'm teaching, because I don't know if you do Enneagram, but I'm an Enneagram 3, and I'm really getting things done and checking off my list. And sometimes I'm guilty of following my lesson plan rather than teaching my children, teaching my students. And so I just always have that up when I teach to remind me that I teach these kids in front of me. And if we get to music, that's great. And we always do. But I teach kids, not music.
Mm, that's perfect. We all teach some variation of a kid, whether they're an old kid or a little kid. Thank you so much for being here. This was really fun. I appreciate your time.
Great. No problem. Thanks for inviting me.
We all teach kids. We teach kids music. Big kids, little kids, every kid in the middle. And we teach them how to be artistic and beautiful and express themselves. This research today, presented by Dr. Craig Hurley, offered you some ideas to look at your music and maybe flip it horizontally and embed some of those artistic elements from the beginning. Whatever you choose to do, I hope that this inspired you. I hope it gave you ideas. And I hope, because you're listening to the end, that you know what you're doing matters. Music really matters. And I'll see you next time on Music Matters.